Welcome, 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 fans. This is this week's version of The Lockdown featuring T-Cub and the Ball Hawk. This week, we have a special guest. We have former Cavalier great Don Majkowski, a.k.a. The Magic Man.
Believe in magic.
Nice.
What's up, fam? What's going on? How you doing?
Hey, thanks, guys, for having me on. Hey, I'm honored to be on. Nothing, man. I'm just, you know, trying to get through this crazy time right now, man, Atlanta, Georgia. Right. And, you know, just trying to stay safe, man. You know, it's some trying times, crazy times.
Absolutely.
No doubt.
So we start out our first segment was going to be talking a little bit about a review of the UVA versus Wake game. Okay. We took another one on the chin. And Ball Hawk, what did you see, fam?
Another slow start and another team starting fast, you know, chunk plays, and we're stagnant. You exert all this energy coming back. You do that, and then the big play puts us in the hole again. And I don't know about you, Cub, but this is the first time in years special teams hasn't been too kind to us. Right. You know, so I mean, after they score on that long run, for them to pooch kick and guys not be able to field that cleanly, that to me was discouraging, because usually we're the one that's a step ahead in the special team. And I know Coach B, I know that was like, that's killing him. I know it's killing him. Knowing him personally, he takes pride in having the best special teams unit. And there's been some type of miscommunication or screw up, you know, that's been under the microscope, you know what I'm saying? From the return to like the fumble kickoff by TK. Then you had the big return for Clemson. Then you had the timeouts versus NC State, and then you get the pooch kick. And I ain't even worried about Brian Delaney's miss. I mean, he had made 16 in a row. Like, we knew sooner or later that. But that right there, after that long run, that killed our momentum. And
yeah, I agree. And I think it's just the plays that we're not making. You know, I think we're at a point where our football team is not strong enough where we can't make plays when they're there for us. You know, a couple of them, you know, Terrell Janna had a, you know, wide open in the end zone, stone through behind him.
Two times.
Another time. Yeah, twice. You know,
same and then, route, same concept, same play.
Wide open. And you can't afford to miss them like that. Mm-hmm. Not when it's a team that's really needing momentum and they really have no crowd to feed off of. So they need each other. And so I look at, and you know, even though Wake Forest started fast, you know, when the offense started getting a little bit of momentum, the defense came back on and they started to shut things down. Mm-hmm. I think what disappointed me the most was the play of the secondary overall. Sometimes you just don't see that coming with an experienced secondary. It's, you know, if they can have those chunk plays and the ball's going over their head, it's going to make for a long afternoon. And, you know, for Wake Forest to average 19 yards per catch. Yeah. I mean, what, dude, it's that's going, and then we go back to that, we're turning the ball over three times a game. So a team that we thought would be led by defense is not getting it done. But hey, man, you know, there's always next week. We got a tough one coming up with Miami, and we'll let it do what it do.
Yeah, and I know the fans gonna want to hear both our assessment, because we play defensive back. I mean, you know, you play more years at UVA than I did at defensive back. But with Wake Forest scheme, like with the safeties, their technique, knowing they're going to be on the island, like what was your assessment of that? Because I just felt like they was doing themselves a disservice of trying to, what I call catch, of sitting at seven and shuffling out versus just using the regular pedal and keeping guys in front of them in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, what they did was got their eyes, you know, they were looking at that eye candy. And you got a guy streaking down your face. You can't stare at, you can't stare in the backfield. I mean, it's not your job to make the play at the line of scrimmage. You defend the pass. You keep them from lighting the scoreboard up. The front seven, that's their role. Let them do what they do. As we always say, it's 1/11. One guy has to take care of his job when 11 on the team, you know, at one time, on the field at one time. So if you get your eyes caught in that backfield, that's why those safeties started, you know, they got lit up on those first two long passes.
Yeah, and I know if you look at that long run again, that 1/11 make a lot of sense.
It does.
Because somebody
can't play Superman.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, it's a college player, so I don't like to disclose names. But when you look at that play, I'm like, I pinpoint, like, dude, what are you doing? Like, you can't do that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and you hear Coach Mendenhall talk about it. Everybody has an assigned gap assignment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one guy got washed, but then, you know, you got to have the safety. Because also it looks like, hey, you know, Nick missed me. Nick, hey, he could have made a tackle. It was going to be a tough one, you know, but he still got to get him on the ground. And the safety's got to be there to support him, too. And it wasn't there. So, you know, hey, it didn't work out for us this week. But like I said, we always got next week. So that's that, and that's a wrap on that. I want to get to the magic, man. We got it. We got it.
Let's uplift the spirits.
So, yeah, let's lift it up. Let's lift it up and get it back to magic. Let's get back to magic.
I'll try.
Yeah.
It's all good, fam. It's all good. So look, let's take it back, man. Let's take it back to Buffalo, New York. Coming out of high school, man. Yeah, I'm taking it back, baby. I'm taking it back.
Okay.
Buffalo, New York's finest. You coming out of New York, man, and you didn't get heavily recruited because you got hurt your senior year. So what happened?
Yeah, it's my high school football career, Tony, was non-existent. you know, when I was a sophomore, I played JV, you know, quarterback. But then when I was a junior going on varsity, they had a senior ahead of me. I didn't even start at quarterback. I played corner. So the whole year. And, you know, we ran the option. A kid was a good option quarterback. We were undefeated, and they put me at DB. And then my senior year, you know, I was looking to get, you know, still recruited because I was going to a lot of college camps, and I was getting some exposure of having some, you know, potential, untapped potential because they haven't seen much of me. So, but, yeah, the first game of the season, my senior year, I threw a pass, first pass of the first game, and I broke my passing hand in two spots. So I had a cast on the whole year. You know, I missed my whole senior year and, you know, did not receive any scholarship offers. I mean, not one. So a lot of the colleges said, you know, you still have some talent if you still want to, you know, try to play D1. And I knew I could, but it's just, you know, just the opportunity. It just wasn't my time yet. So they told me about going to a military prep school, and that was Fork Union Military Academy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I looked into it, and it was really the best option for me at the time to to try to save, you know, a dream of playing D1 football. And I went to Fork Union. I took a visit there, and, you know, the quarterback that was showing me around, who was just graduating at the time, was Vinny Testaverde. He is just leaving.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Vinny was showing me around, and he was already going to Miami, and I'm, you know, he was telling me what a tough year you're in for, because you know being, I was an 18-year-old kid, you know, had my own car, with the public high schools. This was a serious military high school that also had a 1-year postgraduate program, which a lot of players enroll in to save their, you know, dreams of playing college football. And that's what I did. And I went there, and thankfully, you know, that is the one most important decision that I made in my life, is going to Fork Union, as far as athletically, because there's no question that Fork Union, without Fork Union, I don't know where I've, you know, I wouldn't have been playing college sports or college football at a high level.
Right.
So I owe everything to Fork Union, you know, it was a great thing.
Dude, you put in work though. You know, one of the best, you were voted the best athlete in 1983 MVP for both football and track. Let's talk about the track skills. Let's talk about the track skills real quick.
Yeah,
you know,
man.
We always get everybody talk about, you know, they hoop game.
Yeah, oh, basketball.
I know you got hoop game too. FYI.
We'll get to that.
But your ability as a high jumper.
Yeah,
and triple jumper and 300 meter hurdle man.
Yeah, hurdle, 300 hurdles, man. I didn't have the speed for straight out sprints, man. But I ran the hurdles, and yeah, I was a high jumper. You know, I was just a pretty good natural jumper. And I mean, I only jumped 1 year in high school. In high school, my senior year, because I played baseball all 3 years prior. And you know, when I decided I wanted to play football in college, I ran track my 1 year because I always knew I could high jump. I always wanted to set the school record, you know, but I ended up doing 6'6" in high school. And, but then when I got to Fork Union, you know, I played football, and after the football season, I asked the basketball coach, I said, hey, you know, could I possibly play hoops, you know, as well? And he's like, eh, man, you know, all these guys that play here, Don, they're D1 prospects, man. I don't know, man. I'm like, can you just try me out? So I tried out and ended up playing hoops too. And, you know, after football season, and had a great time, man, you know. So, you know, what, you know, had a really good time. But then, yeah, in track, I high jumped at 4Q, and I ended up high jumping, what, 6'11", 6'10". And,
he said that, yeah, like it's nothing though. It's just 6'10". You know what I'm saying?
But I mean, I didn't even, you know, what's crazy, I didn't even train. I mean, I wow, you know, I played football, I went right into basketball, and I went right into track, and then I just started jumping in the meets, you know. And
that's special though.
Wow.
It was crazy. Yeah, it was crazy. So I didn't have them Herman Moore skills, man. Herm won a bit higher, man. He used to always tease me about that, man, when I was in Detroit. But yeah.
Hey, let me ask you,
but
this.
It was pretty
with the
good.
With the high jump, did you go over backwards, or did you do the split leg?
No, man, Western roll, no. I did the Fosbury flop, man. Okay. Yeah, you go over backwards. Went over backwards, and yeah, man, it was something that I was pretty natural at. So yeah, I did that as well there. So that was pretty cool.
You held that high jump record for 10 years there, dude. You set it in 83, and it was there until 93, dude. That's impressive for somebody who was just naturally did it and didn't get the really opportunity to train at it.
That's exceptional.
So Hawk, real rap. This dude got mad hoop game. So imagine his hops. This ain't a version of White Man Can't Jump.
I'm about to say that's Billy Hoyer but he could actually jump though. Because Billy Hoyer can hoop now. He can hoop.
But he can jump too. No, magic.
So he was Dan hoop. Marley then.
And he had bounce. Hey, I'm talking about bouncing, bruh. The hoop games in Slaughter back then.
Oh, man, that's what I'm saying. Man. You know, the football guys get their team together, man. We had some guys that could hoop, man. Chris Warren could hoop.
Ryan Jackson.
Ryan. We had a bunch of guys. You know, my poor former teammate that passed away, man, played
Daryl Hammond.
Daryl Hammond. Oh, yeah. D. Hammond.
I forgot. Poor Daryl was great. So there was a lot of guys, man. We put a hoop team together. And yeah, man, at Slaughter, we had some great games, man. No doubt. Yeah. So
That was amazing. That was an amazing time.
You know, it was actually. Yeah, you know what? I actually, when I was at Fork Union, you know, when I was playing basketball, the head basketball coach at UV at the time was Terry Holland. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he kind of invited me to come out for the hoop team, too, you know. So I wanted to play hoops at UVA, too, but George wouldn't have it, man. George,
Christ, you can't
George
do it.
Wasn't having it, man. He said during spring ball,
you're a quarterback.
Man, if you're practicing, you ain't going playing hoops. So
it's bad enough you're jumping out there with the track people.
Yeah, exactly, man. George put me in place, man. So that was that.
No doubt.
I never did that as a quarterback.
Yeah, man. But I'll tell you what, that's like. You know, when you look back at your career, you always say, as an athlete, man, you want to get everything out of your ability. You don't want to have wonder what ifs.
True.
One of two what ifs in my career, man. You know, if I could have played hoops, if I could have played, how much fun we would have had. I would have loved to have played. Yeah,
dude.
Because I know Kirby played.
I got a picture of Coach that I need to share with y'all. Y'all probably can see it. Nah, you ain't gonna be able to see it.
No, we can't see it. I'm back into the background.
Who was it with Coach?
I've been playing in college. Coach in college.
Yeah. Oh, Wells?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Hey, when George, you know when George played quarterback in college, right?
Yeah.
Is that what you showed a picture of, George?
Yeah, that's what I was showing. He's running with the ball.
Oh, so let me tell you a quick George story about playing football and coaching me up, man, UVA. This is Chris. Hey, you know Antonio Rice, right?
Yeah.
Me and Antonio were roommates and best friends at UVA, man. So one day we're practicing at, Scott Stadium, and it was back when we had all that turf, and it was like short turf, slippery turf, and it was raining this day in practice, and it was raining, and George was out there, and he was yelling at me, man. He was yelling that I wasn't running the option right. I wasn't riding the fullback long enough, and he was yelling at me, right? So George, man, he got so mad, he said, Christ, Mikowski, get out of the huddle. He threw me out the huddle. He called the play in the huddle, and he went and played quarterback. Now, he had these plastic coaching shoes on, right, with flat bottoms. George got under center, and we're in full pads, man. George has got his coaching gear on. He took a snap and tried to run the option. Dude, he wiped out and broke his leg like compound fracture, man. Tore ligaments in his ankle, man. And he was laying there screaming on the field. And me and Rice are looking at each other, man, crying, laughing, man. But then when he was hurt so bad. Rice goes down up to him. Hey, George, you know you got to spat up, man, before you try that shit, right? And George was just screaming. But I'll tell you what. Hey, to George's courage and toughness, man, that dude got up off. He was so embarrassed. He got up off the ground, and he walked off on his own. And he had compound fracture, man, torn ligaments. And Rice and I went to go see him later the next day at his house, man. You know, he was out, had a cast on for I don't know how many months. But, yeah, man. That's my coach. Well, coach.
I was on the scout team.
Oh, you were there.
His exact words were Christ.
Christ,
my fucking ankle.
Right, right. That's I forgot you were there, man. Okay, you were there already. Well, you were.
Damn it, Don! You're not supposed to listen to me. Why'd you listen to me? You wasn't supposed to move.
That's
damn it,
man. That's it.
Oh my God,
Ethan. Hey, oh no, that was just Joe. Hey, Joe. No,
we were laughing so much trouble. I got in so much trouble for laughing. I could not stop laughing.
Man. That's what you call laughing my pain, huh?
Right. Oh, yeah. Rice and I always had this thing, man. We were so silly, man, that like when guys got hurt and they came off to the sideline, like hurting, like it started with me, my freshman year, man. I was playing my freshman year against Virginia Tech, and Bruce Smith rocked me and hit me in the hip. I had a bad hip point. I'm crawling off the sideline, man, looking at my hip, and I'm screaming, right? And Antonio Rice, he's a sophomore one of our stud players. Anyways, man, another buddy of his, man, they came up, looked at me, and they said, man, what's wrong, man? And I'm like, I'm hurt, man. They just started laughing, right? I said, shut up, man. It's not funny. And then he just started laughing more, you know? And that just became our stitch. But guys got hurt, man. We kind of would laugh at him if it wasn't too serious, man. You know what I mean? We were stupid like that, man. But to this day, Rice and I are still like that, man. It's crazy.
Oh, that's funny, yeah, man. Rice is funny as hell.
Yes, yeah.
Man. Quentin Walker. That was another Quentin Walker. Oh, cute, yep. Man. Yeah. Quentin Walker and Rice, man, started me up on that. So, yeah, that's great.
Funny.
That is
so.
Funny,
yeah. When you so did you have any other offers besides Virginia at your last year after Fort Union?
I did. Yeah, when I was at UVA, I mean, I was getting recruited. A lot of the ACC schools. Mm-hmm. to be honest with you, being from Buffalo, New York, you know, I was getting. I got told to go to Fort Union by Syracuse, and Syracuse is only 2 hours from my home, you know? So
okay.
I really, really wanted to go to Syracuse. And so the coaches told me, you go to Fort Union, have a good year, man. We'll get you a scholarship, man. I never heard from Syracuse ever again, man. So, UVA was so close, and I got mostly heavily recruited by UVA. And I mean, a lot of SEC schools, Ole Miss, LSU, mm-hmm. recruited me, and you know, being from Buffalo, a Yankee from Buffalo, I didn't know. I saw that rebel flag at Ole Miss, man. I'm like, I ain't taking my pose behind, man. Ole Miss, I didn't know nothing about it, man. I wouldn't even take a visit, man.
I don't blame you. I do not blame you at all.
Hey, so yeah, anyway, I mean, now I'm learning more about it. That's a great place, man. But I didn't know anything about it back then. But But you know, it was actually easy for me being so close to UVA. Yeah, I got to know the coaches there better than anybody. And matter of fact, I had Jim Dombrowski was from Buffalo, New York, and he went there the year before I got a scholarship, and he was a big influence. You know, I talking to him, being from Buffalo, telling me how great it was, and telling me how, you know, what a great opportunity with Coach Welsh, and that, you know, they really don't have an established quarterback. You know, you have a great opportunity to turn this program around with a lot of us other guys, and you know, great school, and man, it had everything. So it was pretty easy for me to go and choose Virginia.
Right. Speaking of not having an established quarterback, you had to deal with Wayne Schutz.
Wayne Schutz was a decent quarterback. He was a fifth-year senior, man. He was my boy, man. He was roommates with Rick Carlisle, who played basketball. Rick Carlisle, the coach now, Maverick.
Yeah.
So he was roommates with Carlisle, man, and I was really good friends. Schutz was a good dude, man. He's a great guy, and we were great friends. And to this day, he's a big real estate developer in Miami. But yeah, Schutz was a fifth-year senior, so you know he played my whole freshman year, that when he was, you know, after my freshman year, that then a job was, you know, open to me and Fergie and Sequels, which I had no idea them two other all-state Virginia quarterbacks were coming in the same time with me when I got there. That was a little surprise when I got there. I thought I was gonna be the guy right off the bat, man. I had to fight off those guys.
Right. But yeah, dude, once you got in there though, bro, I remember coming up on my, you know, just checking you guys out, man. And was like that number one and that number four and that number 11 in the backfield, man, that was sweet. It was so sweet.
Yeah, man. You know what? It was, it was the first time in a long time that UVA had something to be proud of, you know. They had been poor for so long, man. You know, our class, you know, like, you know, 84, the 84 year was really when we started all starting and playing and brought back a little, you know, that pride and excitement back to UVA football, man. I mean, you know, when you guys, you know, took over and Sean Moore took over and you guys took it to a whole nother level. But we started it, man. We really started the program with George, and it was cool to be the pioneers, kind of to get this thing turned around and be a part of that, you know?
Yeah, no doubt, dude. I mean, in that first year, you got that start, bro. 8-2-2. I mean, and it's crazy. You guys opened up that season against Clemson and got waxed, and then it was like you guys hit the ground running from there. And it was just, dude, it was an amazing first year for you, dude. I mean,
You know, I didn't start till the fourth game of the season that year, though, man. Fergie was quarterback the first three games, and even the fourth game, and I had to come in the fourth game, I think, at halftime against Virginia Tech and lead like a comeback. And then I finally got the starting job. Yeah, so I had to wait, man, like, you know, four games my second year even. And then they made the switch, and, you know, I kind of took over after that. So it was nothing easy, man, nothing handed to you, you know, no doubt. Everything was earned, man. That's why, you know, grateful everything I did accomplish, because it was rough, man, getting to where, you know, you ended up.
No doubt. So yeah, man. You ended up still having a great year. Then 85 rolls around. You know, 6-5 season. You know, kind of middle of the road. You guys, you know, talk a little bit about that season. Oh. You know, after you're the man for you take over after game four, 80, lead them to their first bowl game in school history. Win the Peach Bowl. So you guys got a lot of momentum coming back into that 85 season. Talk a little bit about that the year after that.
Yeah, that was the most disappointing. I mean, that was a big disappointing year for us because, like you said, man, we were all coming back. We were all going to be more experienced. We thought the team would be, you know, much better, and we ended up just not having as good a record, man. We lost some close games, and but we still, I mean, we were a good team. There's no question. We were a good team, man. But we didn't live up to our expectations, man. That was a big disappointment. I know that was B Word's, you know, great ACC player of the year, man. He played unbelievable. Yeah. He was great. You know, and having Howard Petty, that tandem, like you mentioned before, those two guys, man, were unbelievable. It was a great tandem, man. It was, you know, it was speed, power. They both had power, man. They both had speed. Howard was a great slasher, man, hard runner. And B Ward, you know, he was a long ball game breaker, man. It was, you know, and I ran the option well, man. But, you know, I wish we could have thrown the ball a little bit more, man. Dude, I didn't get the opportunity to throw the ball like these cats did after I left, man. They changed the whole philosophy. And they've been running four wides and stuff, man. I never had a chance to do that.
Right. No doubt. Yeah, dude, like I said, so this was, you know, I remember coming to a game that year and just walking in this guy's stadium. And like I said, I remember the three of you guys stood out to me, dude. Yeah. And, dude, you running out on the field at number one, I was like, okay, who's the cool white boy? For real. I was like, yo, this dude got crazy swagger. I was like, you were toting that. You were running that option, toting that thing. B Word was trucking dudes. I was like, the crowd was going crazy. I was like, you know what? I think I can do this.
It was cool, man. It was fun being a part of bringing it back, man. Because the fans, you know, that's what they say. They had some excitement to be proud of again, and something to be proud of, you know, as a team. So, Yeah, man, we ran the heck out of the option, man. I tell you what, man. I taught Sean Moore everything he knew, man. Don't let him don't let him tell you I didn't, man. He was my protege. That's my boy, though, man. If you're watching, Sean, you know what's up.
You know what's up. I like you know, huh?
You're right. I love it. I and love who, it.
Who was the OC when you were playing?
It was Tom O'Brien.
So Obi was there.
Yeah, Obi was there. Yeah, Obi was there a long time, man. Yeah, Obi was there a long time. So, yeah, man.
Yeah,
so.
I wonder what made him change then. They know, you know what I'm saying? Like, they got knowing you could throw the ball.
Yeah, I know. You know, actually, the year after I left, I graduated 86. And Scott Sekulow took over, man. That's when they changed the whole offense. Sekulow ends up playing 1 year, and he's ACC Player of the Year. I'm like, damn. Yeah. I was a starter here for 3 years.
You probably was like, man, I think it's personal, man.
So I missed out a little bit on throwing the ball, but man, it's
Christ, okay. He made me break my leg. He's not throwing a damn ball.
Yeah, man.
Because of him.
So I guess, man, we were lucky that we could run that ball, man, with those guys running the option. That's how we beat teams, man. And we did a little play action pass once in a while, man. I had, you know, Geno Zimbalink was a really talented tight end, and we had John Ford and John had some good speed, man, but not a lot of depth at receiver at the time, you know what I mean? Not a lot of depth. Right. So it made throwing a ball at that time a little more difficult. There were some good guys, man, but like I said, after we left, man, you guys brought in all the talent, man. It was crazy change, man. I mean,
but you know, but we wouldn't have came if it, you know, you guys kind of set it for, you know. And like I said, so we were coming out, we watched you guys in 85. And so, you know, it was like we all were like, you know, let's go in and kind of extend what's going on. And so a bunch of us that came in 86, you know, we had big expectations. We opened up South Carolina, we beat South Carolina.
Yeah,
damn wheels rolled off the bus.
I don't know what happened, man. We had season, first of all, we had Chris Warren playing cornerback. That was the first mistake that you.
Truly,
they had Chris Warren at DB. Remember?
Really?
Truly, yes. Yeah,
Chris Warren had Chris at DB. Man, we had Kevin Morgan at tailback and Chris Warren at DB. Man, that was our first mistake.
Yeah. We'll never understand that one. We'll never ever understand.
I mean, Chris returned punts, man. He returned a punt against South Carolina, remember? But man, he should have been playing tailback, man. That was our first mistake. But the wheels did fall off. But you know what? That year, you know, we lost a lot of the seniors, like B Word and Howard Petty, and it was just me and Antonio Rice were like the only two. Fourth year guys starting. It was all new young guys on the line, you know, and they were just inexperienced. But you know, we took our lumps, man. And I got hurt. I think the fourth game of the season, I was running the option against Duke, and I separated my shoulder, a second degree shoulder separation. I missed, I think, 4 weeks, and I came back after that, but my shoulder was jacked up, and I didn't do much, man. We didn't do well. And as a result, man, there goes my draft status, man. My draft status went way down, man. Yeah, before the season, man, I was ranked like one of the top five like quarterbacks, you know, and there was four quarterbacks that got drafted in the first round my year, you know. So, but I ended up going in the 10th round. I was the 13th quarterback pick that year because I got hurt and, you know. So, again, man, just had, you know, but that was just another road I had a hurdle to get over, man, to get to where I wanted to go, man. It was another chapter of my story, man.
And that's it. That's it. You know, you are the consummate underdog, bro. We all got that underdog with Dennis, bro. And, you know, we all had to overcome something to truly get where we are. And, you know, people sometimes they hear underdog, they think that's a bad thing. I'm like, nah, that just means we have achieved greatness, you know, after dealing with so much and it didn't break us.
That's
And we
never lost faith in ourselves or belief in ourselves. And that's the key, man. You cannot lose any kind of faith or confidence in yourselves. And I never did. And anybody who gets to our level, man, does not.
True.
But like you said, man, there's so much to overcome. And that was just, you know, another hurdle I had to overcome. And there was quite a few. But, yeah, man, if it's something's worth achieving, man, you got to go for it. And I was pretty proud of myself that, you know, to keep on going, man, and keep on fighting and, try and make it to the NFL and then after college.
Absolutely. So
what was that evaluation like for you? Because you talked about, because I didn't want to jump. Well, you still want to talk about college?
Go ahead.
Okay.
That's all right.
Yeah. How was that the evaluation? Like when you came out, what was the feedback you were getting? And were you surprised that you know, they wait until the 10th round to select you?
Well, so here's the thing. I mean, you know, I injured my passing shoulder. And then when we all went to the combine in, I think the combine was like it was February, right? It still was in Indianapolis at the time. My shoulder was healing up, but I wasn't ready to bench press yet, you know, and then when it was time, you know, when you go to the combine, you get in front of the coaches and GMs and they're like, okay, they called my name and I'm like, well, I can't do the bench press because my shoulder's still hurt. And it's like, oh, red flag, you know, but
right.
By the time the draft came and I'm sure that hurt, man. I went there and I worked out, man. I threw the ball okay. I'll admit I didn't throw it great, man. My shoulder was still getting stronger. But by the time the draft came, you know, in end of April or whatever it was, May, in end of April probably, I was 100% fine. But it was already too late. They made their evaluations, and you know, I understand, but I was excited to show them, you know, I wasn't a 10th round draft pick when they got me into Green Bay. Right. Right. I had a lot to prove, man, because I knew damn well I wasn't. So yeah.
Yeah. And no doubt. And when you got there, you know, Forrest Gregg was the coach and it was Randy Wright was the starter. I don't know who that is to this day. I looked, I said, Randy Wright, you know, so you Randy had to be Watson. Thinking, hey, you had to be like, okay,
Wright. This, I mean, regardless of what round I got drafted, you know, 10th, it was disappointing, man. It was really disappointing. But when I got drafted by Green Bay, there couldn't have been a better team to get drafted by with having an opportunity right away. Because Randy was a starter there for 4 years prior to me getting there. He went to Wisconsin, local guy. You know, and he was I'm not, you know, knocking him, but he was a very average quarterback, you know, and didn't have near the ability I had. And I saw that the first day I went into camp and I'm like, this is mine. And I ended up starting the second game my rookie year on, man. They put me in my second game my rookie year. And I played, you know, in and out my rookie year because I had, you know, everybody goes through, you know, up and downs, you know, as a rookie quarterback. But I got a lot of experience. And then, you know, mostly started my second year. And by my third year, you know, it was mine. But, it was a good place for me to go as far as opportunity-wise. Because that's, I mean, NFL, man, I see so many talented guys go to the NFL, but they just don't land the right place.
Yeah,
man.
There's
some luck, to make the squad, man. There's no doubt. You can have all the talent in the world, but if you got Dan Marino in front of you or John Elway, man, you're not going to play. Like Sean true. Went to Denver. Yeah,
exactly.
Man. You know?
Exactly.
Mean, yeah, so, you know, I was lucky that I went to a place that didn't have a superstar quarterback. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, so then, you know, after that first year, got your feet wet a little bit, and then in '88, you had 9 starts that game that year, and start really getting your footing. You know, 2,100 yards passing, 9 touchdowns, 41 rushes, 220. You know, another touchdown there, and then you guys in that year, you guys switched coaches too. So Lindy,
right? Infante, so that was Lindy Infante's first year in '88, man, and he came in with a pretty complicated system. So it took us, you know, the whole year to learn that system. You know, it was a great system, but it was complicated, but we started getting the hang of it. I think we only ended up winning, six games that year, I think. By 89, my third year, you know, we were looking for better things because I knew the system. I stayed there all off season. I studied really hard. Watched a lot of film of like Bernie Kosar because Lindy came from Cleveland, so Bernie ran that system. So I studied, you know, just the system, and you know, really, really got a good feel for it. And then, you know, by the time, you know, when I went into camp, I won the job outright.
Yeah, it helped to draft Sterling Sharp and Brent Fullwood in that 88 in that first round too. That kind of helped a little bit. So.
Big time, man. Sterling was unbelievable. Ooh. He was so good. And, you know, too bad he got hurt. I mean, his career got cut short, man, after I think, 7 years?
Yeah.
But, man, it was a pleasure playing with him. I played with him for 6 years, man. He was just awesome. Yeah, he was so good. And didn't have a lot. He didn't have a lot of complimentary receivers that were, I mean, you know.
True.
You know, he was the one man show, and it was hard for him. But he still got so much production.
Yeah, he was by far. People say who's the best receiver you played against? I always say it's Sterling Sharp.
Yeah.
You know, I remember I played against them in college, and he scored every which way imaginable on us.
Yep.
We had to go down to South Carolina. And then playing against him in the league, you know, and he and I were friends.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, dude, he is just, he was so strong. When he moved, it looked effortless. He just looked like he was gliding, and he was moving so fast, you know, and he was such a smart, cerebral player. I mean, you know, he and I would be chuckling it up in between plays. Then when we line up, it was almost like he just zoned, and he knew where everybody was supposed to be on the defense. I mean, he was such a student, you know, to be such a great athlete, you know? And so, man, I know you loved having him, because when I look at, you know, his first year, you know, hey, he was productive that first year, but man, the second year, when you guys knew that offense, he went from 55 catches to 90 catches and 1400 yards and 12 touchdowns. You know that, bro. Yeah. Y'all went 10-6 that year, and y'all had the thing rolling big time.
Big time, man. You know, Sterling ended up being all pro. I ended up leading the league in passing that year.
Yeah.
That was crazy, man. When I got to the end of the year and they're telling me, man, you're leading the league in passing, man, I'm like, no shit, man. I said, I couldn't throw up a shit at UVA, man. And here I am leading the NFL in passing. I'm like, damn. I'm like, that's no awesome. Kidding, man. And then at the end of the year, we were playing the Bears we played the Bears the second last game of the season that year in 89, and we beat them up in Chicago. And all the Bears DBs, like Sean Gale and all those cats, were coming up to me and they're like, hey, man, congrats, man. You're gonna go to the Pro Bowl. And I'm like, what? I'm like, I wasn't even thinking about it, you know what I mean? And I was like, man, y'all voted for me. And it's like, yeah, man, you're gonna go. I'm like, man, that's crazy, man. You know, I was just going about my job and not even real. I had I couldn't even imagine that. But that was pretty cool. You know, that was really cool. And then, so I'm gonna segue into the fourth year, man, because this is the fourth year. So after my 89 season, my third year, this is the difference between the NFL now and the NFL then. My contract expired after my All-Pro year, man. My contract was up, right? Green Bay hadn't had a quarterback, man, for 20 years. And, man, here they had a 25-year-old kid, man, who just led the league in passing, made All-Pro, had all these young guys around him. We had 10-6, had such a bright future. And I'm looking for a long-term deal, right?
Exactly. And
they just offered me a real low-ball one-year deal. And they made me hold out all training camp. And I missed all training camp that year. And, you know, really, it really took a negative impact, or it really affected me negatively in the fans' eyes. They thought I was being greedy and holding it out. And anyways, just having me hold out that whole training camp, and my three offensive linemen, starting offensive linemen, had to hold out. By the time we all came back, you know, we were so far behind that, you know, I ended up signing that one-year deal. I got it up a little bit, but it still was it was nothing what I deserved. You know what I mean? But that's the difference between now and then. I got no signing bonus. They gave me a one-year deal. And, you know, they said, just have another great year, then we'll give you the long-term deal. Well, you know what happens then, just like Dak Prescott, man. Just like Dak Prescott, the 10th game, and I got slammed down. I tore my rotator cuff, my passing shoulder, and had major reconstructive surgery, my passing arm, and it never came back to being the same, man, really.
So
I never got that long-term big deal. So, yeah, I got shafted there for a little bit. But, you know, what are you going to do?
That's the ugly part of the game they don't tell you about, though, man.
Right.
You know, people don't understand. It's corporate big business, and it is ugly. It's ugly business.
It is, man. But I just – it's they've changed it now. I mean, a little – In a sense, I'm just saying the way they take care of the quarterbacks now. I mean, signing guy or every position. If you're a great player, a leader of your team, they're gonna redo your deal when you have two years left.
Yeah,
I mean that's crazy, man. You know, I mean, that's awesome. I think it's great. I think it's great they're doing that. And I wish they did that for us back then. You know? But it was different, man. It was different.
No doubt.
Hey. We could talk NFL stories back in the old days, man. People don't believe the stories I tell, man, like how archaic things were, man, and how hardcore they were compared to the things they do now in the NFL.
Yeah.
Man. It was a different world.
Yeah, give us an example, because I know, you know, when you first got there, you know, the salary is like 60K, you know, compared to now, you know, you can just invest in playing football. But did any guys on your team have jobs in the offseason?
No. The minimum salary was like 60, 65, man. But like, you know, guys were making like, I was making close to $2 million a year, man. You know, but what I was talking about, you know, mostly the things that were so different. Like, I was even telling my daughter a story the other day. We were watching the Packer game together, and she said, "Hey, why does Aaron Rodgers come off after every series? And he's got like an iPad on his lap." And I'm like, "Well, he's looked at the film. He's reading the defense, right, of what he just went against, right? And he's watching the whole play." And I said, "You know what we had back when I played, man? We had a wire that went all the way from the press box down to the player's field. And they used to slide like one photo at a time on a clothes hanger, man, down to the field, right?" Right? And they would slide all the way down. We'd get one sheet of paper with just a picture of the defense they did, probably three snaps. Wasn't even what they ended up in, but that's the... I said, "That's the shit we had to deal with, Danny." And then I was telling her how we didn't have microphones in our helmets, man. We had to signal in every play.
Yeah.
It was like sign language. But she's like, "Wow, man, it's crazy, right?" And it wasn't even that long ago, but things changed quick, man. That's funny, man.
Man, for sure.
That's awesome. Sure.
Yeah.
So you had a couple more seasons in Green Bay. You know, the year you tore your shoulder up. Then in 91, you came back. You had 8 starts that year. One thing I wanted to talk about, though, Magic, was, man, you got sacked a ton, bro. You took a beating in Green Bay. I was looking at the numbers, dude. Like 31 sacks, 47 sacks, 32 sacks. I was like, that's a lot of time getting put on the ground. Even your Pro Bowl year, man, you were sacked 47 times that year.
That doesn't even say the times I escaped the sack because I can move. It should have been like double. You know, back in those days, we were behind so much, you know, when we were throwing the ball, teams knew we were throwing, man. They were teeing off. And we did not have a very good running game back then, you know, except for that 1 year with Fullwood, man. He made all pro. Right. He had 1,000 yards. Mm-hmm. Other than that, man, for most of my career, I was like the second leading rusher on a team, man. Every year was crazy, man. But, I took a lot of hits, man. And unfortunately, you know, I played 91, man. I played 8 games. And then I hurt my tendon, my hamstring behind my knee. And I missed most of the rest of the season. And then 92, man, you know, that was a year that, you know, Mike Holmgren came in. They brought in the new GM, Ron Wolf. And that's the year they traded for Brett Favre.
For Brett Favre,
Yeah, and, you know, he was my back. It was crazy, man. When Favre came in, man, I knew, you know, I had gotten hurt. I didn't blame them. You know, I knew that their reasoning for getting a quarterback, you know, and they traded number one pick to get Favre. But when he came into camp, man, let me tell you something. When he came into camp his first year, man, I saw him practice like the first week. I was like, they gave a number one pick to this crown? This dude? I said, he can't. He was awful, man. I mean, he could throw like 1,000 miles an hour, man. But he was like just, you know, real raw, man, you know. But, you know, he did a nice job with the coach, you know, reeling himself in, becoming more professional and learning that Holmgren system. And then when I got hurt in the third game of the season, he played and he was pretty green, you know, his first bunch of starts, but the team got better and he got better. And, you know, then that was my time in Green Bay, man. Cause that's just the way it goes, you know. And that's a common story, man. Nowadays, man, you look at so Bledsoe got knocked out, and Brady goes in, and even Peyton Manning leaves, and Andrew Luck comes in. I mean, right, Montana even leaves, and Steve. I mean, it's crazy.
Dak Prescott.
So it's a common story, man. You don't take it personal, man, or you don't let your ego get involved because it doesn't matter how good you are, you're always gonna get replaced, man.
True. Mm. That's the way. And look
at Favre. Favre got at the end, man. Rod
he did. he did too.
It all comes full.
Did you act like Brett did it? They claim Brett didn't want to provide tutelage to Aaron Rodgers.
I did. Yeah, I mean, Brett and I were good friends, man, when I was there. And that's just not my nature not to be cool to someone. So I was real helpful to him. When I was out like 8 weeks with this hamstring deal. So Holmgren actually pulled me into his office and said, hey, you could blow this thing up by being, you know, an asshole to Brett, or you, could you be professional? And I said, man, you got no problem, Mike. I said, Brett's a good guy, man. It's not his fault that I got hurt. I'll help him out as much as I can. And and I did, because he was learning that West Coast offense as well as I was for the first time. And it was a lot of study, man. It was hard, man. It was a lot of verbiage. So I tried to help him the most I could, and you know, taught him what it took in the weight room, because he didn't work out a lot back then, and tried to be an example. But you know, not burning any bridges, man. I think he appreciated it, man. We end up having a good relationship, you know, even after I left to this day.
That's nice. Cool. That's cool.
Yeah, man.
I did want to put a little moment of personal privilege in. One of them, one of those sacks in 1991, one of those 30 sacks was mine.
You know what?
Dude, you let Cub sack you? Like, hey, was that straight hand in the bar? Was that scripted?
Hey, let me say something, Tony. To this day, man, I've never had a chance to tell you this, man, but you know, you didn't just sap me. Dude came in like a missile, might have hit me in the ribs, right?
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, man, it hurt, man. I'm like, and I looked and I saw it was my boy from Virginia, Tony C, and he's like, yeah, and he was like talking shit still, man. Not even, he didn't care what you made, nothing, man. I'm like,
Did you send Sterling deep goes, better than the next play? Hey, Sterling, crack and
no,
go.
No, that's the way it goes. No, that's the way it goes, man.
No, hey, yeah. That was Tony Mandridge's fault. That was his fault.
But dude, don't think I didn't forget that. But I always remember that, man. You didn't have to say you remember.
Yeah, you had to hit me that hard. I mean, damn, you hit the sack.
I remembered.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Imagine, man. Did say guys used to tee off, and you just confirmed they teed off.
Yeah, he did, man. Yeah, he did. Right, that's a good one. Exactly. Yeah, that was.
So then you left there, man, and you you go to the Colts, and they got Jeff George as the starter there. Ted right. Archibald is the coach, and so you were backing up Jeff George and Jeff. You know, I mean, what was your mindset going into that scenario?
You know, I was a free agent after, you know, when Green Bay, you know, decided not to re-sign me.
Right.
Actually, they offered me a contract to come back, but they told me it would be as Brett's backup. And in hindsight, I kicked myself in the ass, because I could have collected a check for 16 years without playing the play, man. You know what I mean? If I would have came back behind
Brett.
Right. But no, I wanted to move on, man, because once you were the guy there for a little bit, it was his time. I moved on, and when I went to, I was a free agent, and I wasn't really getting signed, man. Teams were already in the summer camp. And I was unsigned, man. And the Raiders brought me in. I had a meeting with L. Davis. L. Davis for like an hour. It was just me and L. Davis in the office, and he offered me a contract. And it was it was okay. And I was thinking about going there, but the Colts came back like a week later, and they offered me quite a bit more. So I ended up going to Indianapolis. But man, that meeting, that's a whole nother chapter in my book. That meeting with L. Davis for an hour, man, that was a trip. That was awesome, man. That was awesome. Yeah, he was cool as hell. He was very complimentary, because in 90, before I got hurt, man, we went to L.A. and played the Raiders in the Coliseum, and I had probably one of my best games ever, and tore their ass up. And he remembered that, man. He was real complimentary, and he was cool as hell. Yeah,
I like how you threw that in there.
Every other word was the F-bomb out of him, though, man.
Of course.
Hey, Cub, you know how you slid that in there, Cub?
He had his silver glasses on with the chains, man, the leather jacket on behind his desk. You know what I mean? Nice. It was pretty intimidating, man. It was cool.
It's like talking to George again.
Huh?
It's like talking to George again.
Yeah, man.
Christ,
This was George on steroids, though, man. Al Davis took to another level.
Right.
Come on in, Magic, man. Have a seat. You kicked our ass last time we played you. Put on that silver and black.
Hey, man.
Play for a while.
I went to Indianapolis, and Jeff Jordan was holding out. So,
okay.
Nobody knew if he was coming back or not, man. And you know, I was like, man, you know what? I'll go there. I knew they had Jack Trudeau, and you know, if Jeff came back, I knew he was going to be the starter, so that was okay. But so I went there and competed, man, and ended up. And Jeff ended up coming back, and actually, I ended up becoming really good friends with Jeff, and to this day, we are, you know. And
Now,
people don't get him because, you know, he's pretty cocky, man. But for a quarterback, it's easy for me to get along with him. You know what I mean? Don't bother me, man. So, he's a good dude, man. But anyways, so Jeff played the whole year, and then And then I came back a second year, and Jeff left. He went to the Falcons. Right. And then it was me and Jim Harbaugh in Indy, okay, man, with the two quarterbacks. And yeah, so Harbaugh started, I think, the first seven games. I started the last eight, mm-hmm, or nine or something like that. So we split time. And yeah, man, it was and I wish and then I signed with Detroit after 2 years in Indy. But I signed too soon because my old coach, Lindy Infante, came back to Indianapolis.
Oh,
right. Yeah. Right after I signed with Detroit, Lindy came to Indy, and yeah, I could have been playing for my old coach, man. That would have been pretty cool. That's when Harbaugh had his best years, man, when he played in Lindy's system. Remember?
Right.
He took the Colts all the way to the AFC Championship, and they were calling him Captain Comeback and all that. Yeah. That was Lindy's system. Was that good system, man? He helped them out. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
How was the time in Detroit?
Detroit was cool. Detroit was chill because it was my last 2 years, man. I was the backup again behind Scott Mitchell. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it was just no pressure, man. I knew, you know, I was just having a good time the last 2 years. I mean, I worked hard, you know, I was a very good, reliable backup. I played in several key games, but I got to play in a couple of good games, man, and helped the team to some victories in Chicago. Me and Herm hooked up for a winning touchdown pass. So I got to play with Herm and Ray Roberts and Greg Jeffries, man. All three of us were there together. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. That's so, good stuff.
But it was two good years that really not a lot of pressure, man. Scott Mitchell was the starter, man. You know, everybody has their, and he played well, man. They had a great year. It was his 2 years, first 2 years there when I was there. He played really well, man. And we went to the playoffs and he had over 4,000 yards. So it was fun playing with Barry Sanders. I mean, getting to play with Barry, we all had played against Barry for our whole career. And,
yeah, right.
Finally to become friends with him and you hang out with him and play with him. That was pretty cool. That was a highlight there too.
You got any Barry stories?
Oh, man. Yeah. Barry, man. He's a funny dude, man. He's like, you heard, he's the most humble superstar ever, man. You know, and that dude, man, it would be funnier than people would think, man, in his own way, like during practice and stuff. Uh-huh. You know, if you're on his fun side, he would joke around, man, in his own quiet way. But, you know, never seen that. We never saw him out. We didn't go out, you know, like a lot of us did or anything. He kept to himself, man. But hard working dude, man. After practice, man, I never seen somebody, you know, like, to run extra, you know, sprints, 100-yard sprints after practice. That dude knew he had to be in the best shape possible because he carried the load so much, man. Every play, every game, you know, he never came out. So, yeah, so nothing really, really funny. Like I could talk about Herm more, man, but
oh yeah, you could share some Herms too.
I got to know Herm in Detroit really good, man. We became good friends. Herm, man, he was funny, man. He was cool, man. You know, at the time, the big thing for Herm, man, I don't know, he was obsessed with damn Pulp Fiction, man, and he knew every damn line for Pulp Fiction.
Oh, and it was Samuel L. Jackson, man. Huh?
We would go back and forth. Yeah, man. Herm was good, man. He was a good dude.
Oh
yeah. Wow.
That's awesome. So yeah, man. So then I ended up 10 years, and then you know, prior to that, my 10th year in Detroit, though, Tony, I was playing racquetball with one of our kicker, Jason Hansen, man, and I had re-injured that ankle that I hurt when Favre took over for me, and I was having problems like in June, right before camp in July. So they ended up doing surgery on me in June. And by the time I got to camp, you know, we're playing the first preseason game. I was nowhere near ready to play. I mean, I was about 60% healed. I mean, not even close. And I remember, you know, I got some pressure from the coaches saying, hey, man, you're going to be our backup this year or what? We need to see you by the third preseason game. And I was like, man, you know, this is my last year. I didn't want to, you know, lose Megan this money. So by the third preseason, I wasn't practicing all week, but by the game time, man, I did what it took to go out there and play and just trashed my ankle, man, for the rest of the whole season. I was playing in preseason games that just tore my ankle up and forced me to retire. That's what forced me to retire after my 10th year, by coming back too early, and which has led to 9 surgeries on my ankle post-career, and my ankle's fused with 13 screws and 2 titanium plates, and is had nine surgeries of my 23, man. I got my 23rd surgery coming up in a week and a half, man. I'm having a anterior neck fusion, C4 through C7, man. Yeah, so been through a lot post career as far as the injuries. You know, you said I got hit a lot. It really caught up to me later in life, man. I had a lot of degenerative disc disease. My lower back is fused. My ankle's fused. Now I'm getting my neck fused. And yeah, I had a lot of surgeries. And you know, I had a rough go, man, for a lot of years. But, you know, we all do. But I'm just trying to make it, man.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Yeah. Dude, you had a lot of game. You had a lot of game winning drives, man. Fourth quarter comebacks and game. You had 10 game fourth quarter comebacks and 13 game winning drives. Which one stands out to you the most? One or two?
Yeah, the first one, it was my in 1989. It was the second game of the season. It was against New Orleans, man. We went down 24-3 at halftime. They had Bobby Hebert, and we had lost the first game against Tampa, man. We had Tampa beat us, man, through an interception, man, trying to lead a fourth quarter comeback. And you know, the fans were booing me a little bit. And then the second game, we were down 24-3 at half. I think I might have thrown three interceptions in the first half. But the second half, man, something just started clicking, man. That's when I really started getting hot with this offense. And I had like 18 straight completions in a row at one point. And at the end of the game, we were down 6 points with a minute and something to go, man. We went 80 yards, and I threw a winning touchdown pass to Sterling, and we beat him 35-34. After being down 24-3. So that was probably, that's my first memory of, having the best comeback, one of the best comebacks, man. And, obviously probably my signature play, man, everybody kind of remembers when I was in Green Bay, it was that same year when we had beaten the Chicago Bears on the last play of the game. And they call it in Green Bay, they still call it the instant replay game, because it was the first year that we had implemented instant replay. And, we were down like 13-7, with the last minute drive, and we got all the way down to the field, and we needed a touchdown to win. And we ended up, on a fourth, and it was 4th and 16, but we couldn't get a first down because we had penalties. So it was 4th and 16, man. We were down by 6, and I ended up rolling out to the right and scrambling a bunch and got real close to the sideline and real close to the line of scrimmage and threw a ball, back to the middle of the field to Sterling. And he caught it for the winning touchdown, but the referees threw a flag and said I was over the line of scrimmage. And they reviewed it for 4 minutes, and this is, and we had not beaten the Bears in 8 games in 4 years at that time, because the Packers just weren't good, man. This was like, the beginning. So, yeah. So after 4 minutes, man, they had a, a reversal. They said after further review, we had a reversal touchdown, man. And the Packer fans went nuts, and so it was a last second kind of win versus the Bears. That's probably like the most memorable,
That's awesome.
One. That was pretty cool. Yeah.
That is awesome.
I was gonna ask him, his nickname, the Magic Man. When did he get that nickname, and who gave him that nickname?
Honestly, where I got that, man, it started at Fork Union, because you see, my last name has a silent J in it. Mm-hmm. It's spelled M-A-J. It looks like Majkowski, right? Mm-hmm. So when I went to Fork Union, all my coaches, they didn't know I pronounced his Polish name from up north, man. So they were all calling me Majkowski, and they all started calling me Magic for short. And my teammates caught on to it. And yeah, that's where it really started at Fork Union. Mm-hmm. And then when I went to UVA, it just carried over, So, yeah, but it really probably didn't gain national exposure or national, became a national brand until you get to the NFL, and I kind of branded it. And yeah, the Magic.
Comebacks.
M-A-J-I-K, man. That's the way I spell it. So, yep.
That's nice.
That was my thing, man. Yeah.
That's nice.
It ended up being pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So which meant more to you, getting inducted into the Packers Hall of Fame in 2005? Or the ACC Class of Legends in 2019?
Well, I mean, I got to be honest, man. I mean, going into Packer Hall of Fame was crazy, I mean, because here's the thing, man. I was like, I had a couple of really good years up there, man. But I know I didn't have a string of really great years. And I was surprised they even nominated me. But they said this. Even though I didn't take them to the playoffs or play any Super Bowls, at that time in Green Bay's seasons, or that season, time of life that the Packers were struggling so much that I was part of, like, kind of like at UVA, I was part of bringing back so much pride and excitement back to Green Bay football.
They said,
man, we started watching football again because of you. And man, you were so exciting for those, you know, 6 years you played, that you had a huge impact. And they really, you know, inducted me based on that, which I thought was really cool, you know. So
that's awesome. That's awesome.
So, I mean, that was cool. But they're all memorable, man. Fork Union Hall of Fame is memorable, you know. I didn't get in that UVA one, man. You know,
don't worry about
but
it.
But you know what? Then it wouldn't let me throw the ball, man. That's why.
Hey,
I wonder when after you were all pro and going to the Pro Bowl, if George looked at Obi and said, "Christ, why didn't you let him throw the ball here?"
Right.
You could have used that.
That's what I told Coach Sherm. Sherm was my quarterback coach. I looked at Sherm. I said, "Look." Six takes over for me for 1 year after I leave, and you guys start throwing a rock, and he goes ACC player of the year. I gave Sherm a look, like, every time I come back, I used to tease him, you know. So, yeah, man.
Sherm probably had a nice joke on deck, too, because, you know, Sherm
loved
kept Sherm, a little
man.
Joke.
No, he couldn't say anything. He knew I was right.
Yeah. What, Sherm speechless? You had Sherm speechless?
No, he wasn't speechless.
Oh, I was about to say, man, you really are the magic man. You had him.
No, speechless. Man, Sherm's never speechless. Man, that's my guy, though, man. I love that dude to death, man.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah.
So Capone, tell me, what's here too, right?
Oh, yeah. What's that? GC been there forever. Come on.
Okay. I just want to make, you know, because they always was at the hit when I was here, so that's why I asked.
I missed what you said, that last thing.
Capone,
I'm sorry.
Jerry Capone.
Oh, G. Yeah, he's been there. He was there back when I was there. Yeah, he's great, man. He's the only one that's there, you know, still from when I played, man. Yeah, he's awesome, man.
He don't got hair anymore.
I know. We're all losing it. Hey, we're all losing it, man.
And he rides a scooter, though. He rides a scooter.
That's all right.
Oh, you can't take it easy on Capone. No. Magic Man. Hell no. As come much on. As Capone rimmed my ass with text messages and stuff, you gotta let him have it, damn it. Let him have it.
Man, that's my guy.
Because he's gonna text me later tonight talking, saying something crazy. Hey, sweetheart. Tell you on the walkthrough.
No, that's my guy, man. I love G. Man, that's what he takes care of. That's my guy.
Go ahead.
Yeah, man.
GC. Oh, GC. I tell you what. So tell the fans what you're into now, man.
Well, first of all, man, you know, I had a real estate investment company that I had for 10 years. I was a partner. I bought a lot of properties in Atlanta, but I stopped doing that in 2008 when the market crashed, man. I took a pretty good beating. And ever since then, man, I've had a lot of string of really bad health issues with surgeries, you know. So mainly these surgeries, man, have been taking up a lot of my time. And right now, man, all my focus, I have a really good time. My son plays baseball at Clemson. He's a senior at Clemson, Bo. And, man, he's doing real well, you know. And I go up there every weekend, and it's so much fun, man. As a dad, I'm so proud, you know, of him. And to go up and watch games, it's a lot of fun, man, you know, so much fun. Yeah, so it's awesome. Only an hour and a half north of where I live, and it's a blessing for him to be so close. And, you know, I had a daughter from Georgia, and she's working now here in Atlanta, and she's doing great. So, yeah, I'm just, like I said, getting ready for another surgery, man, next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow. And, you know, I'm going to have to battle through that and, you know, recover and just keep on keeping on, man, and go support my son. It's fun.
Yeah, no doubt. What position did your son play?
He played right field or center field, but mostly right field, yeah.
Oh, he got the big arm, then. Get it
big
to
arm,
third.
Big arm, big hops, man. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Cub, I played baseball, Cub. Yep.
Oh yeah, I did too in junior high.
Yeah, man.
Why nobody brag about playing baseball? They always brag about basketball play. Could you hit the little ball?
Yeah. Do you think he does? He have a chance at MLB?
I mean, everybody has a chance. You know, if he has a really good year and consistently hitting the ball, you know, he could get drafted. But I mean, you know. I think getting to the pros in baseball is the hardest sport, guys. Yes, I mean, with all those levels of the minors, it's crazy hard, man.
Yeah,
I see these All-American guys that are the best hitters in the country, man, still are down to minors for years, man. It's a hard life, man. So I don't know.
That's,
we'll
that's
see,
rough.
Man. You know, it's up to
that's
him,
rough.
Man, how bad he wants it. We'll see.
Okay.
We'll see. Yeah, he definitely got the talent, man. We got to see, you know, see what happens. But I'll be there to support him either way, man.
No
see
doubt.
Why they call,
no
you
doubt.
See why they call it the show when you make it to the show because
it's so hard to get up there. It's crazy. But you know what's crazy nowadays? I mean, you look at the Atlanta Braves, they lost, you know, I live here in Atlanta. Atlanta Braves had five dudes on a team last series that were under 23 years old out in the field at once. That's crazy, man. You normally don't see that, you know?
Yeah.
So, not to go off tangent, man, but yeah. So,
nah, that's good.
That was crazy. Yeah. So anyway, but that was interesting.
Can you, since you down there in Atlanta, Magic Man, can you tell me what's going on with Atlanta teams and giving up leads?
Wow.
I mean, you down there, man.
Hey, I got to know Matty Ice. I got to know Matty Ice. What's his last name?
Yeah,
Matt Ryan.
You know Matt Schaub down there too from Virginia. Oh, no, so that's who you about to call him. You was about to call him Matt Schaub.
I see him. I see Schaub once in a while, man. He was in the gym back when I was going there, man. I haven't been there in a minute, but he was there. But Matt Ryan, I got to know too because I met him and went to a couple practices, and we had that common coaching thread in OB, man. I said OB was his coach in Boston College, so we had something to talk about and became friends over that. But man, they have so much damn talent at receiver. I mean, and all around, man. Last game, finally, they got it going on, man. But, I mean, they just have too much talent to not be winning more, you know. I mean, Matt Ryan is still good enough to win. You know, they're looking at, you know, could he be getting out of here? I mean, sure, he's been there for 13 years. It's that time, maybe, you know.
Right.
But he's not the reason. They're no. Losing, you know? So it's just,
no.
They have too much talent. Too much talent.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah,
but I don't know, you know, the in-depth reasons, man. I don't follow them that much because on Sundays I'm watching my pack, man.
There you go.
Yeah, no doubt. I was real disappointed this Sunday.
Yeah.
They was rolling till Aaron started. Yeah.
Well, they lost to Tampa Bay, man. Your team beat them up. Good, man.
Yeah, but you know, so I was cheering for Aaron Rodgers. You know, because I like Aaron Rodgers. I'm not a Tom Brady dude.
I'm about to say he don't like Tom Brady. That's right.
Really? You know, I'm not a Tom Brady dude. So you know, I was cheering for Aaron because I want him. I want him to win.
Yeah.
You know, it's just I feel like he's still one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I like the way he plays the game, and I don't have a team that I root for per se, but I cheer for players that I like, how they approach the game. And,
they still have to get him some help at wide receiver, man. He needs some more depth, man. I mean, I was so frustrated to see all the receivers they passed this year in the draft. Yeah. I mean, they could have.
It makes no sense.
They just took the running back from BC.
Right. Yeah. He played two downs so far this year, man. So he's going to be a beast, I'm sure. But
yeah,
man, we could have had so many great receivers, man. You know. Yeah. So, but anyways, and he's still having a great year, man. But Tampa Bay put a beating on. But anyway, yeah, that dude, man, he's the best thrower of the football I've seen. Seriously, man. Dan Marino is like one of them, but I swear, man, Aaron Rodgers, man, does things that. I've never seen quarterbacks do and so effortless.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree.
Yeah, man, he's something else.
I agree. Well, Magic Man, we appreciate having you, dude. And we always end our show with a segment called Shut the Hell Up, I Am Underdog. And what that is something that pisses you off, but you're gonna overcome it anyway.
I already know what he's gonna say.
It doesn't even have to be sports related, but it can be if you want. Holler at us.
Man, the biggest thing that pisses me off, serious, is, and I tell my son this, man, is to see people with tremendous talent not get everything out of it. Mm-hmm. I can't stand to see people like just not work as hard as some less talented guys that achieve more than the talented guys. That is the thing that bothers me the most, is not guys just wasting talent.
Mm.
That's my complaint, man.
Mm. Takes me back to a line from the Bronx Tale. There's nothing worse than wasted potential.
There you go. Bam.
Damn. Magic Man just dropped the damn mic on us. Good God. Damn. What can you say after that? I don't even know how we can end the show.
Yeah,
like, we should just go. That's tough. That's how we should just end.
That's tough.
That's much needed right there. That's much needed.
Yeah, man.
That is much needed.
Yeah, yeah. So seen cool. too many. Seen that too many times, man. I've seen so many great players come into into your teams in the NFL that just don't study enough for whatever reason. They get cut, and they're just way better than some of the guys that make it, man. That's the thing that bugs me. That bugs me a lot. Yeah, man. So anyway,
it's real. It's real.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And here I was going to think he was going to say, you know what? I'm tired of these goddamn surgeries, but I'm going to overcome. And he won up that.
I'm telling you what, man, that too. And
we be praying for you though, brother.
Yeah,
man.
Bro. We're praying for your recovery, yes, sir. Man, fam.
Thank you. Thank you, man. Yeah. I'll get through it, man. It's rough, man. It's, you know, we all go through it, man, after football, but,
you'd imagine, man.
Be all right. Be all right, man. I appreciate you guys having me on, man. It was a pleasure, man. You guys are cool as hell.
Hey, you know, man. Thank you. Hey, we appreciate you, fam, for sure. Yep. Always, man. Hey, let's stay linked up, man.
Holler at me anytime, man. Holler at me anytime, guys.
Absolutely. Magic, absolutely.
All right.
Well, fans, this is this week's edition of The Lockdown featuring T Cub and the Ball Hawk.
Uh-huh.
With special guest Don Magic Man Mikowski. We are out.
That was awesome.